You are in the California Ballroom B, where a panel will be held in a few minutes. Well, actually, it's starting now. Before we begin, will you please take a moment to silence all electronic devices? And then, thank you. So welcome to the 54th birthday party of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Cindy H. That's not H. That's my last name. My name is Cindy. I am a compulsive overeater and your moderator for this panel. Once again, if you haven't done so already, please silence all electronic devices. Hi. Please join me in the serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
In keeping with the birthday party theme of higher powered, the topic of this panel is our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, shaping a healthy sexuality. Our speakers today are Justin, Christy, and Heather. Each will share their experience, strength, and hope for 15 minutes. After the speaker is shared, we will have 20 minutes for questions. A basket will be passed around the room. If you wish to ask a question, write it down and drop it in the basket. Krista, will you raise your hand? She'll be passing the basket. We will do our best to get through as many questions as possible. If you would like to direct your questions to a specific speaker, please write their name along with your question. You will find paper and pencils in the basket that is being circulated. So now, on with the show. Our first speaker is Justin from Los Angeles.
Hi, I'm Justin, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Justin.
Thanks so much. Didn't think I was going first. Oh, man, am I nervous? Yeah. I have, so to start off, my current abstinence is 3.5 years. My abstinence date is July 2nd, 2010. My abstinence is I abstain from sugar and white flour. I'm currently maintaining about a 200-pound weight loss. Good stuff. I brought my old clothes. I got visuals. I got clothes and pictures. So here are my pants. Wait for it. And this is my shirt. What's funny, I have pictures too. What's funny is that the shirt that I'm wearing is the exact same shirt. Well, it's not the exact same shirt, but it's the same shirt as I'm wearing in one of the pictures, except this is a 2X and I'm wearing a 5X in the picture, so hey. All right, so here we go. Man, I'm still nervous. So I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope in terms of my recovery and sexuality. When I was, you know, there's a definite, I believe there's a definite correlation between food and sex. I'm not a scientist, that's just my personal belief. When I was 15 years old, I saw this television show in which a character included like pastrami with his sex making. He would have sex while eating pastrami. And he was like, this is the most amazing thing ever. Now I was 15 years old and I was still a virgin, but I knew what pastrami was like. And so I figured this dude knows what's up, because when I do have sex, I'm totally gonna incorporate some pastrami. Because it's gonna be hot. It's gonna be awesome. But yeah, I mean that's that correlation of like, because I know for me, when I was in the food, I definitely got a lot of pleasure out of the food when the food was working. I was because of my disease, I was always very, very big as a kid. I mean, it's, you know, I was 180 pounds when I was 10 years old. Broke 300 at 15. High school was very difficult because I saw myself as fat and disgusting. I saw myself as someone who was not attractive to the opposite sex. And that was something I made up in my own head, because when I look back at those pictures when I was in high school, I pretty much looked the same as I do now. That was my disease working overtime. So much so that I was at a wedding in Atlanta a couple years ago, and a friend of mine who I hadn't seen for 10 years, very tall, beautiful, blonde volleyball player, you know, we're talking, and on her third glass of wine, she said to me, "Why did you never ask me out in high school?" And I was like, "Seriously?" I mean, because in my head, I could only be somebody's friend. That's the only thing that I was good for. I was not someone who was desired by others. I definitely desired other people, but that certainly fell into the realm of, like, fantasy, along with all the rest of my other fantasies. My fantasy of one day I'll wake up and I'll just be skinny. You know, like all of the other fantasies that I lived. And so, you know, my sex life was very, very, I'm a late bloomer, plain and simple. Plain and simple. My sponsor, you know, he reminds me of that. He's like, "You're a late bloomer. It's okay." The first girl I ever kissed was on a dare, and it was at the end of my freshman year in college. I was almost 19 years old. I still remember it. It's actually quite funny and quite good. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 21 and a half. Because I was, you know, I was also very scared of sex. I was very scared of not the physical part, but I was really more scared of the emotional part, because I felt as if, you know, the person, because the thing that I've made up in my head, you know, I had parents who, God, I love them. They met their freshman year in college, and they basically stayed together until my dad died 42 years later. And so in my head, like, that's what you do. You meet somebody, and you stay together with them until somebody dies. so romantic. Yeah, but that's the model that I had in my head. Thank God my sponsor today tells me, you know, he's like, maybe that person is the one, or maybe they're just another teacher along the way. And that is such a powerful thought, because I used to think, okay, this is it. This is the only one. This is it. And it's that black and white thinking that's diseased thinking. You know, you know, like I said, I lost my virginity at 21 and a half, and, you know, one would think, all right, here we go, awesome. No. I mean, like, I averaged, like, a partner every 2 years. And that's not to say that, like, I was in, like, a two-year relationship. No, there was a sexual event that happened, and then 2 years later, there'd be, like, another one. Yeah. And it just kind of ran the gamut of, I mean, anything from just, like, making out to oral sex to full-blown sex. I mean, it was very haphazard and intermittent, and there was very little depth from my part or for the other person's part. And what I've come to learn in looking back at that stuff is that the way I thought about sex was very, very much diseased. I thought, if I perform well enough, you will stay with me. If I perform well enough, you will stay with me. Perform. Even the word perform. Oh, my God. That's like, it makes sex into something that was like a chore, something I had to do, something I had to do well, because my greatest fear was, you know, you leaving me. I first came into program in 2006, was absent for about a year and a half, and then I relapsed for 2.5 years. During that relapse, I look back at that and see just exactly how little I thought of myself. During that relapse, I dated somebody who, for about 3 months, who told me on our first kind of second date, you know, basically she said, "There's not going to be sex at all, ever." It's like, okay. Now, normal people would be like, what? Okay, next. You know, like, I'm just going to go on. But, of course, I thought so little of myself. I was like, okay, whatever I have to do to keep you happy so you won't leave. And, you know, this person basically used me as a as a vacation from their life. You know, I never met their friends, I never met their family, I never was really included into their life. And that was okay with me. That was okay with me because I didn't have enough value. I didn't value myself to see that, you know, I should be with somebody who's willing to give me as much as I'm willing to give them. So, you know, what does it look like in recovery? In recovery, it looks like I step away from that idea of performance. It's really hard because that's an idea that I've internalized for years and years and years and years. I was talking to a program friend a few months ago about an old relationship that I'd had, and this was a relationship I had a year ago, and I said to myself, I don't understand. Like, she left, and I don't get it. Like, I mean, the sex is really good. I don't get it. And, you know, I was still thinking in that old way of, like, you know, if I perform well enough, she'll stay. And, you know, my friend, she told me something that never even crossed my mind. She was like, you know, even if you have good sex, you know, sometimes it's just not enough. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? Like, that's insane. How can, like, good sex not be enough? But apparently it's not enough. And I had to learn that for myself. You know, I had to be in situations where, you know, yeah, the sex might be great, but I'm missing out on all of the other emotional aspects of a relationship. And so what I had to do was I really just had to take a step back. I had to stop dating, take a step back, and really learn more about myself, what I want, what I'm looking for. And it's a process. Like, it's not like I'm not dating until I figure out exactly what I want, who I am, and what I want to go after. No. That's not the thing. Thank you. It's more about finding that space in which I can be comfortable enough to share myself with someone else who's willing to share themselves with me. So, like, sharing myself with someone else is completely different from performing. I mean, that idea of performance, it's like, you know, I'm not a trick pony, you know? I'm not something to just kind of dance, you know? I mean, that's, like, ridiculous, right? And that's what kind of puts me into the spiritual and emotional part of recovery. You know, there's also amazing parts of the physical recovery. Here's something I didn't know. For every, and this is for the gentlemen in the audience and out there in tape land, for every 40 pounds you lose, you gain an inch. I'll just let that wash over you. And I've lost 200 pounds. There's also, like, you know, stamina, flexibility, all that great stuff. you know, who knew? Sex can be a lot of fun. It can be a lot of fun. But it's only fun if, you know, like, all the other, like, you're willing to share yourself and find somebody who will share themselves with you. So I had these, like, parochial ideas. It's like, oh, you have sex with somebody, you have to be with them forever, and did all this kind of stuff. Like, hey, guess what? No, you don't really have to. You don't have to. Like, it's okay to actually meet somebody, enjoy their company, have fun with them, and it doesn't have to last forever. I was like, wait, what? Really? You can do that? And they're like, oh, yeah. And it's okay. It's okay. Not quite there yet. You know, just kind of figuring this stuff out. Would like to, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how to do some of these things. But like I said, it's a process. And the only way you can get to do them is to jump out there and to try. You know, otherwise, and you have to try, but you also have to learn from your mistakes, which is what we do in recovery anyway. You know, you get out there, you get out of your comfort zone, you do something you haven't done before, and if it doesn't work, okay, let's try something different. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, it's just like with my food plan. My food in these last 3.5 years, my food today doesn't look like what it looked like on day 30. It just doesn't. It evolves. It changes along with my recovery. If I believed that I could eat the same exact thing from week one down in year three, physically, emotionally, spiritually, I'm not going to be any different. So why does my sexual life have to stay the same? It should continue to change and grow as well, too. So. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. That was really great. Our next speaker is Christy from Los Feliz.
Yay! Hey guys, I'm Christy. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. Justin, thank you so much. He was actually the first speaker I ever heard in OA ever, and completely changed my life. And it's just so meaningful to be up here on a panel with you. Honestly, I never who would have thought. So I kind of just want to talk about, I guess, to start with, what sexuality means to me. That was kind of the question that was coming up in my mind as I was thinking about after I was asked to speak here. So thank you. And so I'm going to try to be super rigorously honest without being, you know, crazy inappropriate. And I'm going to try not to cuss. But I feel like this has been a very, very, very intense part of my life, both in OA and in my other program. I feel I have a message. So I'm just going to, like, ask that God truly just speak through me. And so sexuality to me is my most primal, like, feminine, beautiful gift. It's something that I think I've always intuitively as a woman just known was the most powerful, beautiful, sacred thing. And before coming to OA, it was the complete opposite, whether it was being in the food and not having sex at all and wearing frumpy clothes and feeling disgusting, or kind of like our previous speaker talked about earlier on, you know, puberty hit me really bad. I had acne all over my chest, all over my face. I had really greasy hair. I had such low self-esteem. And my, like, best thinking was to, like, sleep with anyone. And I grew up in La Cañada, and I just, like, did not fit in there. And, you know, my best thinking is, like, I slept with everyone, you know. And they would literally, like, I'd sleep with anyone. They'd be like, get the F out of my house, you know, like a little. And I was on drugs, and it was just, like, anything that I could do to get that self-esteem, I felt so bad about myself. Never used protection. I don't know how I don't have, like, 18 billion STDs and HIV and, like, just no self-esteem. And, you know, so when I started in my other program and I started doing my drug of choice, I lost a lot of weight. I went from this, like, chubby, acne-infested, low self-esteem. I'd, like, bleached my hair, but it was orange. It was, like, I felt so subhuman and disgusting about my body. Disgusting. And no boys, like, had crushes on me. It was, like, so not that. And so when I did my drug of choice, I instantly went from, like, almost overnight, 99 pounds. I started hanging out. I moved west to, like, you know, Sunland, Tahunga, Pacoima, started hanging out gangsters and, like, put cornrows on my hair, extensions, drew on my eyebrows, was 99 pounds, like, and was, like, the best sex I ever had in my life. I was, like, high on meth with a guy that was, like, fresh out of, you know, prison. And it was, like, a very, very, very violent relationship. And so that's jarring in and of itself, you know. And I never had a voice. Never had a voice. Like, I lost my virginity at 13 to a guy that was way, way older. There's a court case you're in. It was awful. It was traumatizing. And that's where it all began. And I never had a voice. I never was like, oh, that doesn't feel good, or I don't like that. And any time I even worked up the courage to be like, I don't know, can we stop? It was like, oh, come on, dude. Like, come on. You're going to give me, you know, whatever. Like, let's. And I just went along with it. And, like, you know, that is exactly. It was devastating. It was traumatizing. And so to be thin and find my sexuality, you know, while on drugs in that violent relationship was a little confusing. But I think it was the first time I released the inhibitions and was, like, able to see that it was in me. But then I got clean over 10 years ago and gained 60 pounds in 90 days. So they say we, like, put down the spoon and pick up the fork. I, like, went to town, and there started my eating disorder for the next 7.5 years where I just binged. I've done it all. I've done the compulsive eating, the grazing, the binging and purging, the just purging, the billions of laxatives. I've done it all. The over-exercising, just I've done it all. And, again, like, even clean in my other program, I didn't sleep with anyone my first year, just over a year, and then slept with anyone again. Like, because now I'm in the food, so I'm abusing one hole. I can't protect the other. It's just was impossible. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm like binging and binging and binging, and you know, still had like totally low self-esteem, and would sleep with anyone. You know, would sleep with anyone, and like. You know, was young. I was 18, 19, you know. Never with protection. Again, I have no idea. And then, okay, so fast forward, coming into Overeaters Anonymous. Well, even just the year before OA, I was in love with a man. Beautiful, beautiful human being. And I just, like, wouldn't have sex with him. Because I was in the food. And the food, there is a correlation. And when I'm stuffing myself, and I was probably 30 or 40 pounds heavier than I am now, it's just, I lost my sexuality. Like, food kills my sexuality. When I am in the food, like, now, I was telling someone before the meeting, like, sexuality is, like, you can see it in the way that I talk, in the way that I dance, in the way that I move, and the way that I, anything. Like, it's, I'm so in touch with it now that it, like, motivates everything I do. I mean, the music I listen to, I'm obsessed with music. I am obsessed with music. Ask anyone. It makes my life unmanageable. I'm constantly at shows on anything. I'm obsessed with music. I literally did not listen to any music in the last year of my food because it reminded me of my sexuality. And I was dead. I didn't dress the way I dress. I had covered my body. I didn't sleep. Sex was so the furthest thing from my mind, you know, and, I was dead. And so I stopped listening to music. I stopped praying. I had absolutely no relationship with God. And so coming into OA, like, first of all, OA was, like, possibly maybe the least, like, sexy thing I could ever think of. And, like, yet it is, without Overeaters Anonymous, like, I would have nothing. So, okay, just kind of, I wrote some, like, notes that I actually felt were kind of inspired. First of all, just page 69 appropriately. Come on, people. Like, that was amazing. But I ask God now, my sex life now, like, the progression of, like, I've been in OA for 2.5 years, and I bring God into literally, by removing the food, I bring God into, like, every single area of my life, and that includes my sex life. And not only just the prayer, like, God, please help mold my sexual ideals. Please guide me in any questionable situation. Please give me sanity and the strength to do the right thing. I bring God into freaking everything because without God, I'm a 13-year-old girl. I'll sleep with anyone. I have no ability, not even to say, like, oh, can we try this or I want this or can I do this? Screw that. If I can't even say, like, no, that doesn't feel good, I don't want to do that, that's my default sexuality. It's like, just, like, I'll just lay there. You know, and so, like, to bring God into it, and I've had people be like, really, you're bringing God in, like, God really wants you to have, like, bodily fluids on you, really? And I'm like, you know what, I bring God into everything. Get there before me, God. Like, please give me a voice. Please help me be authentically me in the bedroom. Like, how do I accept my body? And I started to revere sex and not become obsessed, you know, I love it as a sacred gift. And paradoxically, like, I didn't sleep with anyone last year, you know, because I value myself so much today that I'm not going to, like, sleep with anyone just because, like, it's just so opposite, like, putting down the food and, like, bringing God into my sex life. And I will battle people with it. I'm like, if I don't bring God into my sex life, if I don't bring God into, like, literally an act of, like, specifically what I'm doing, I will be a 13-year-old girl with no voice. And I can't do that. I cannot do that. And so, as a result, like, now I'm in a relationship where, like, with another fellow, actually. Yay, OA! Ow! who is also the most God-centered human being, intuitive, and we communicate everything. Like, I am able to be like, you know what, like, it's so important for me, as lame as I think it is, to be like, you know, I can't tonight, or, like, let's do this, or can we try this? Like, amazing. And right now, the biggest battle I have actually gone pretty far, shockingly, being a little tweaker, homeless, junkie girl, to, like, you know, getting clean and now being in OA. I'm becoming somewhat of a professional, and it's awesome. I graduated from a graduate program in social work, which is amazing, in May. And, like, I dress like this. I dress like this at... Thank you. But I work in the jail, and so I, like, it, with women, but that energy is so different that I shut off, you know, and it's hard to go from super professional social worker in the jail, hardcore, to like, hey, baby, like, let's, you know. And so that's been hard, to be like, wait, it can't be like the freaking best ever all the time, like cloud nine, like sexual passion, when I like was in the jail all day. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's been hard for me. I literally hit such a bottom with it. So to just kind of integrate those two worlds. And it's interesting. I think the correlation between sex and food as well is, like, sex is the most natural thing on earth, and so is food. And if we are both, you know, if I am absolutely obsessed with sex and have to have it all the time compulsively, it's just like with the food. You know what I mean? And if I vilify it, and it's wrong, and it's dirty, and it's bad, just like I did with the food, I'll abuse myself with it. And if I can just, like, find that balance and bring God into it, like I have now, like, I dress the way I dress, I talk the way I talk, there's no shame in my game. And, you know, it's just, I'm so, so, so grateful. And I think that's just kind of like the message that I would want to bring, is like to bring God into it, to just bring God into your sex life. I mean, really, truly, like, I would not have one without my higher power. And like, I have to express my sexuality and my femininity, and I didn't before. And I don't know, it's interesting. I was thinking about, like, my upbringing, like, my mom and dad, like, I've never seen them, like, touch. I've never seen them kiss. Like, I've never seen, both sets of grandparents were, like, super abusive to each other. And, like, I don't have any healthy sexual role models. And it's interesting, like, when I was in the food, when I was in college up in San Francisco, I used to binge and purge watching Sex in the City. And that was my, like, what I thought, like, sexy, powerful women. But I, like, bite my nails. I, like, you know, played soccer. I used to try to pee standing up as a young girl. Like, I was a tomboy, and I, like, I'm very masculine. And that's been, like, another thing that's been really difficult for me, is, like, I'm like, no guy can hang. I'm too much, you know? And, like, so seeing these women on Sex in the City, like, I would sit there and just binge and purge. I was like, I guess that's femininity. I guess, like, purses and labels and New York and makeup and lawyers and whatever, like, I guess that's femininity. And it destroyed me. But I've never had any healthy role models. And so OA, and, like, by being around women and men in OA that are so... It's so safe. I love my other program. I love talking, you know, crazy stuff and going out with them, but it's always, like, sacred, like, home for me. And it allowed me to grow up and be, like, a sexual woman in, like, the womb. Like, it's so sacred. You know, it's so safe. And I just have to be me, you know, and always allowed me to not only get to know, like, who I am, but who I am sexually. Like, that is, like, amazing. Like, I have a voice, you know, and I don't know, like, OA is truly the absolutely best thing that's ever happened in my life, hands down, 1,000 times over. And it's all end with this, like, I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, I email my food every day to that sponsor, I go to meetings regularly, I work steps with that sponsor. I've had meeting commitments. I've started meetings. I've secretaried meetings. I am of constant service to Overeaters Anonymous because it gave me my life. And as a result, I get to have a life beyond my wildest dreams, including a sex life beyond my wildest dreams, which is amazing and totally God-centered. So thank you so much.
The paper says to say, thank you, Christy, but I just want to, God, that was so awesome, like after every speaker. You guys are great. So thank you. And our last speaker is Heather from San Pedro.
Hello. Heather, compulsive overeater, bulimic, and thank you so much for letting me be of service and being here. This is a topic that's close to my heart. I kind of have to take off sort of what I do for my work, too, that around this topic, so I have to sort of switch hats. I have the privilege of, you know, working with people on a daily basis with sexual trauma, and so this is not an unfamiliar topic for me. I grew up with a hippie. My mom was a hippie. I think I didn't realize people wore clothes until about age 5 outside of the home. I'm like, hey, why do the other kids like wear clothes at home when we're farming out in the backyard in Costa Mesa and naked? And so I had this really strange dichotomy because my mom was like hardcore hippie, and then I went to a private Christian school that my grandparents supported. So I'm like, oh, well, you know, what do I do? You know, evil, 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 good, fun, evil, good. So it was just super confusing. And my mom is my best friend. I love her dearly. And, you know, we grew up together. She, you know, she was my much more of a sister at the time than a mom. You know, she was a young mom, and so we, you know, we had our growing pains, and but she's a real gift in my life. You know, there's been a lot of work that I've done in here in program and in my own therapy outside of here, and I didn't have my first kiss until I was 23 and didn't have sex for the first time until I was 27. And I spent years trying to figure out, when a man is in a room alone with me, why do I have panic attacks? I was trying to figure out that for years. Like, I wanted to know. I don't know. I don't care. Like, it just was. And it was very painful because I had, you know, I had kind of this fantasy addiction of this guy on the white horse coming to take me away. And, you know, like just this whole fantasy of, you know, I, at 8 years old, I wrote this book about, you know, how my husband was going to be a construction worker and he was going to come home and I was going to give him a big kiss and then I was going to make dinner and here's what the little boy's room was going to be and the little girl's room was going to be, and I had everything mapped out down to the carpeting. And I mean, it was just, this is how my life was going to be. And so every year that it wasn't that way, I was getting more and more and more resentful, pissed, you know, just really bitter, like friends would get married and I'm like, I haven't even had a, you know, kissed anyone. And I found myself getting more and more resentful and losing friends. Like, friends would get married, have babies, and I'd just be like, I can't be around you. So I went into treatment for my eating disorder at 26, and that, you know, I actually started OA at 16, and that's actually where I developed the bulimia, because I went into sort of a section that was too rigid for me, and I was running cross country, and I made up that because I was binging, I was doing something disgraceful against God. So my purging was like to try and absolve myself from how awful I was being to God and unfaithful. And still there was, you know, mom hippie at home and then going to church like three times a week. Like it was just, you know, my life was just this strange mixture of these two different worlds. I'm going to say a couple things that are kind of candid because, you know, people have given me a gift of sharing them. My first boyfriend was like 27 to 30 years old, a wonderful man. I couldn't have asked for a, you know, better man in my life. He was, you know, sensitive, loving, but there were things about us that just didn't work. So we broke up, and I moved back to California and met this guy that was, like, super, super charming. I heard once, if you see a guy from across the room and everything else fades away, run like hell, because it's bad. Like, it's not good. There's some kind of, like the inner crack addict in me was like, oh, my God, you know, where are you? And that lasted 23 days. And I became pregnant and had an abortion, and it was probably the worst year of my life. I was 31 years old, so 31-year-old professionals are not supposed to have abortions, like 12-year-olds. Like, that's okay, but 31-year-olds are not supposed to have abortions. And I spent the next year binging and purging and drinking, like, constantly around the clock. I thought I might as well be dead. I'm horrible. I worked through that. I got through that. I had a woman in a meeting that I really respected who was a wife and a mother share that she had had an abortion, and I needed to hear that. And I've gotten over, if someone has an evil eye for me, they have an evil eye for me. That's their stuff. Like, you know, I wasn't able to say anything because I thought someone is going to, like, murder me with their eyes because I'm so evil. Well, okay, if you need to do that, you need to do that. But, you know, I get to share my story, so maybe, you know, someone else isn't going to want to have to binge and purge and drink for an entire year and want to die all the time. So there you have it. And I, too, you know, had sex about every 2 years, but it was like a single episode and very dramatic. And, you know, I was like the 23-day wonder. Like, okay. And so I've done a lot of work in program around this, and then, you know, my outside work. And in the OA 12 and 12 in Step 4, they have some pretty intense questions. You know, they ask, have you ever harmed someone sexually? Have you ever molested someone? Have you ever had an abortion? Have you ever had a miscarriage? Have you ever exploited someone? I mean, they're emotional surgery kind of questions. And if you can find someone who you trust enough to say, yeah, I exploited someone emotionally, or I became pregnant to trap someone, or I whatever, you know, if you can really look at those and go, okay, I'm not going to kill myself over my history anymore. I'm going to do the work. I'm going to take responsibility for my behaviors, and I'm going to move forward. And so I had the privilege of working with an amazing sponsor who's sponsored a bazillion people, and she said, I'm not the rigorous honesty with which you were willing to go very deep. Like, I was saying stuff out loud I didn't even admit to myself. She said, you know, that's gotten you into a place where you have a life that you really, really love. And happy to report, I have a boyfriend who's very nice and lovely. We're just kind of getting to know each other now. It's been about a month, and he likes to pray before meals, but he's not like super judgy. And we're communicating a lot together and really well. And he's very stable. He's not an outlaw in a state or a country. I went for one of those. He was like 6'2" and hot. You know, I'm like, okay, you're different now. It was another program that we were both in. So I'm like, so now I've got this really sweet, stable guy in my life. And on our second date, he said, so I'm 47 and I'd really like children. when would you want to have children? And before I would have been like, how about now? Because like now I'm 39 and now I really want to have children. But I said, how about we go on and out to dinner? And that's new for me because I would have been like, okay, you know, showing up in my wedding dress on the first date. And then I went home and I had like hives on my arms because I'm like, wow. And so I got to talk to him about, wow, that's a lot of information. And so now I get to, you know, this really sweet guy who wants the same things that I want, that I could really see, you know, just getting to know more and maybe building, you know, a life that our vision for life is very similar. And so, you know, I get to have some amazing people in my life to help me not screw it up and get to know him and maybe go out to dinner again, see what happens. And I'm meeting his family tomorrow, and they are very, very 5 minutes. Okay, they're very fundamental in their beliefs, and he said they're pretty judgmental and just FYI and pretty opinionated. So, and I've run in those circles, so I know how to, you know, I know how to like manage that, but today I get to be true to myself, not argue with them, but also not pretend I'm not who I am. I get to be gracious and he said, don't say that you slept over. And I said, well, when you come to my family, don't you dare pray before a meal. And so it's just, and we got to both laugh about it, and because part of my family is like atheist and very, very intellectual, and dear God, if you prayed before a meal, it would be, you know, they'd rather see pink panties, you know, on the sofa than pray together. So, yeah, so we're just learning and trying to figure it all out. If you're not at the fourth step yet, do 1 through 3 before you overwhelm yourself with all of these questions. I've seen too many people like hospitalized because they worked too fast on getting to the fourth step and doing the emotional surgery. There's lots of real deep questions for the fourth and fifth step. There's the sex inventory, where have I been selfish, self-centered, dishonest? Where have my motives been, you know, out of whack? And what is my sex ideal? And I think that's the most important piece. What do I want? And what I want may be different than what you want. We are not the sex arbiter of anyone else's sex conduct. If you have someone that tells you what you should be doing with your sex life, that's not what OA is for. You get to decide that. You know, I've had the privilege of helping people discover their sexuality. I'm gay, or I want an open marriage, or it's like, okay, well, what's integrity? What's honesty? What's honest for you? What helps keep you in integrity? And that's what the fourth and fifth step is about with the sex inventory, is to help support people in coming to terms with what their honest relationship with sex is like, not to be the sex arbiter. So that's it for me.
Yay. Thank you, Heather. It's been a great workshop. So I'm going to just start with the questions, and then some are for specific people and some for the whole panel. And I think if to get through more, if it's not for anyone specific, just maybe one of you answer it, and then that, because there's some good questions here, so I'd like to get through them. So this one's for Christy. Describe how you bring God into your sex life. Oh, and use the mic.
Oh. Like, kind of like I said, I pray, thanks for the question. I just pray constantly. Like, I pray every day regularly, God, please help me with my sexual ideals. Please guide me in any questionable situation. Please give me sanity and the strength to do the right thing. Please help me be authentic with me in the bedroom. Please help me accept my body. And then, like, you know, before, like, with me and my partner, I just pray, like, God, please get there before me. Please show me what to do. Please show me how to set boundaries or say what I like. Again, please help me be authentically me. It's prayer, constant prayer. I'm, like, freaking constantly praying. And just talking to God literally all throughout the entire evening or morning or whatever it is, you know, I'm just praying and asking for help. So that may sound pathological and kind of sick, but I need it. So.
And a related question, not for Christy, any of you. How have any of you used the steps specifically on sex in your life? Please talk about that.
Heather, compulsive over. Hello?
Can you hear me? Okay. There's of course page 69 in the big book that talks about, you know, some of us have a, you know, straight pepper diet and the others are like super bland and it's all good, whatever you want to do. I think that if you go online, you can look up sex inventory with the fourth and fifth step, and there's a series of questions. Again, I would be gentle with yourself. Like, don't go for the root if you haven't done the foundational work. Because my concern is that people just abuse themselves with their histories unless they've got a good foundation of, you know, connecting with their higher power and being able to have some loving objectivity about, okay, you know, here's a part of my history and here's what I want to do differently. So, and then in the OA fourth step, there's a series of, you know, pretty heavy questions. So those are a couple of resources that I've found helpful.
So they had said that mic may go in and out, so we're going to have to waste some time. So here's one. Justin, you can answer this one. Does wanting sex from your partner and not getting it make you want to eat? How do you handle it? What action do you take?
Hi, Justin, compulsive overeater. Yeah, that's a funny question for me because I've actually never been in that situation. I've actually been the person who my partner's wanted sex, and I've said no because of the emotional component that I was talking about. I was with somebody who tried to cover up problems with sex, and I was like, no, we need to talk about this. Don't touch me. Yeah. And, I mean, yeah. And that's what you have to do. Well, that's what I had to do. And that doing that didn't make me want to eat.
To anyone, if you had a choice between food and sex, what would turn to if God was the director in all this?
Well, pastrami, I mean, come on.
Well, I think of HALT, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, tired. So if I'm, you know, horny and it's a good situation, then it'd be sex. If I'm hungry and I haven't eaten in a couple hours, then it's food. So I think it really, that was a little crass of me. But I think it just depends on the scenario. You know, if I need physical sustenance. So being in connection and in tune with my, you know, with my body and not crossing the wires, like eating because I'm, you know, sexually aroused or whatever, having sex because I'm physically hungry, I don't know.
Christy, I think this one's for you. How do you keep boundaries when the other person is a compulsive overeater?
Again, like, constant prayer, and like, thankfully I'm with someone that I trust very much, which is why I didn't sleep with anyone all of last year, to just really fine-tune my program and really get centered and talk to I'm rigorously honest with my sponsor. She knows what's up, and prayer and like just talking to him and trusting, like, even if it's awkward or uncomfortable, I'm in and out, I get outside help as well, I would rather have an awkward conversation where I'm like, dude, like, I can't, or like, oh, like, that doesn't feel good, or whatever, or like, hey, can we do this? Versus like not say anything, and then like I will like murder you with my, I will like not be happy, you know, and I'll passively aggressively like punish. So it's just, I have no other option. I will turn to the food or whatever if I can't just be me in the moment and set boundaries. But it's new and it's uncomfortable, and people, even the most brilliant, beautiful, compulsive reader, anyone is gonna, their ego is gonna be bruised. And so just if we can bear through that, like, awkward, like, what, well, you said, bleh, not that he does that, but I mean, like, just whatever, if we can get, like, through that, which I never was willing to do before, then it can lead to, like, this brilliant, beautiful conversation about boundaries, you know, so.
If I could interject to add something, the answer to the question before, that person was also in program. And then I've also dated another woman in program who definitely, what I learned from that relationship was that just because somebody's in recovery doesn't mean that they're not going to hurt you. I went into it thinking, you know, she was sober for this many years, had been absent for this many years, you know, and it's going to be great. And what I learned was she, you know, and not that this is wrong, but she just wanted sex for me. And I wanted a relationship. And I had to learn that those were two completely different things. And I ended up getting hurt because I had the expectation of, I will have a relationship with you if I perform sexually, you will stay with me. And she didn't. She left. She went on and did her thing. So, like, that's a hard lesson I had to learn.
There's a related question in here, but I can't find it right now, so I'm going to just keep moving. Do you feel... any of you guys, do you feel you couldn't have a relationship until you were at goal weight?
I'll start. No, not for me. I was actually going against sponsor advice. Yes, which is always awesome. And I was, yeah. I love my sponsor. He's like, I'll give you enough rope to hang yourself. And so my first 3 months of absence, I was totally dating, and I was dating, and, you know, I was 500 pounds, just under 500. I was losing weight. But I was, you know, I was dating. And what's interesting is that I couldn't, you know, I realized it was too much. I stopped seeing this person, you know, continued on with my recovery, and then towards the year went back to that person. And I learned in that you just kind of, you know, if something's not working, you know, unless they're willing to change, it's probably not going to work.
I found the related question. So, I try to be honest about desires and share myself openly in relationships, but if I get accused of having quote-unquote expectations and coming off as quote-unquote untitled, what am I doing wrong?
I don't know who asked this question, but I guess what comes up for me is I got into another program and started dating a guy like 5 days into it, which is never a good idea. But he did that quite a bit, and that just sounds a little bit like psychological manipulation to me, if someone's being sort of accusatory and you're so entitled. And I know for me that created a lot of doubt in myself, and I was really anxious. And so, you know, if that were to happen again for me, I would sit down and say, hey, what's going on? You know, I this doesn't feel good, this interaction. I mean, there's something a little funky about that kind of sort of accusatory judgment. So, and I'd want to eat if I had to deal with that kind of exchange all the time.
Do you have the issue of wanting to control your partner?
I'm in my third year of Al-Anon. Next question.
Hey. And you guys don't want to answer?
Yes.
How how do I handle a romantic interest who physically reminds me of an ex, who caused me a lot of pain, who is so different at the core, emotionally, spiritually, etc.?
Yes. What I've learned is that I have a certain type that's kryptonite, and I have to stay away from them. Because I go completely insane when I date this certain type of person. And it's not a personality. It literally is a physical type. I just, it just goes up. So I stay away from it.
I guess what I would wonder is how over are you that with that person? Maybe there needs to be some more healing work to be done if there's such a strong reaction about, you know, similar features or characteristics. Because if you're bringing an old lover into the new bedroom, that makes it really difficult to be present for that new person. So I guess my thought is maybe to do an inquiry about how much work have you done on that old person? What do you still, maybe some unfinished business need to work through?
I don't know how to enjoy sex without love. I used to have to convince myself I love someone. How do you do it?
I didn't have sex last year. Like, I used to sleep with, like, anyone as a young girl, and then I would, and then I would sleep with someone right away and, like, pretend like I was in love with them or think I was in love with them and, like, try to force a relationship out of it. And then as I started, like, working the steps and, like, being in OA and putting the food down, I realized, like, I actually can't have sex with anyone that I'm not, like, super emotionally, spiritually everything kind of connected to. And so, like, I just don't have sex. Like, it's not that. I love it, but it's, like, not worth my, like, integrity and my values. So that's like my experience.
During this 3.5 year abstinence, I've had sex with people that I don't love, and it's not been very like regular or often or whatever. But what I've learned is that doesn't work for me. It just doesn't work for me physically, emotionally. It doesn't. And there are definitely those times when I feel horny and I feel lonely and I want to have sex, but I realize I'm like, yeah, but remember the times that you did that, and it just was kind of like, eh. You know, which is kind of what happens, or for me at least, it happened with the food to an extent. You know, it works until it stops working, and you don't get that payoff. So it's like there's a certain, and I think part of this also comes with maturity and kind of growing up and having that experience in some years. And it's just like, well, yeah, I can go out and have cheap sex that's only going to satisfy me for like a day or whatever. Then what am I going to do tomorrow? Versus having that emotional connection.
How are you able to get past body shame obsession in order to be present for sex and intimacy?
I'll start what y'all think. I've learned in this abstinence that my self-esteem, for whatever reason, If I do sit-ups, I feel good about myself. I don't know why. Whenever I do my sit-ups, I work out 3 times a week, and I do my core workout, I feel great about myself. When I don't, like last week, I feel fat. I feel, like these things are, I don't know what it is. And that's what it is. And when I feel that, and I feel great, I can go out and do and be and, you know, smile at the pretty women and talk to strangers and do all that kind of stuff. So that's what it is for me. It's like the core workout. And I'm not, you know, for the people on the tape, I don't have like a six-pack ab or anything like that. It's still a keg, but it's a flat keg. But it's my flat keg, and I love it.
Again, prayer constantly. Please, God, how do I accept my body? I mean, body shame is like the theme of my life constantly, and not just like shame and dislike, like absolute disgust is default where I came from, like disgust, like not even human, like gross. And just like, God, please show me how to look in the mirror, like please show me how to like look at my body, how when I cross my legs and I'm tripped, like, please show me how to wash my face and, like, be without makeup in front of my partner. Like, please just help me. That's how I do it.
How do you become willing to get out of your comfort zone and start having sex again? And they want all three of you guys to comment.
I think it's a foundation, you know, building a foundation of trust and communication. And sometimes I'll talk to teenagers and I'm like, if you can't talk about it in the daylight, you probably shouldn't be doing it. And so, you know, just to be able to talk about fears, desires, interests, and to be able to talk about a lot of other topics before that topic even comes up. So, you know, just building sort of a like-minded connection, humor. So.
Yeah, likewise, like, we were together previously and never had sex. We were together, like, a number of months and, like, constantly communicated about it and talked about it and then actually broke up. And, like, now getting back together, constant communication. Like, we're both have a lot of sexual trauma and, like, we just need to constantly talk about it. Like, this is triggering or that was triggering. I also, like, I don't have much of a comfort zone. I think I'm very guarded. Like, when I'm walking down the street, I'm not like, hey, boys, like, and I'm very, like, it's weird. And so to be vulnerable and, like, let him in, and this may sound kind of weird. I have a best friend who I literally, me and her talk, I would, like, bury the bodies, you know, like, we talk a million times a day. She knows everything. And so to have someone as a sounding board, she's also very sexual. She's also very creative, whatever. Like, I need that because, like, I can shame myself into, like, never or guard myself. You know, after a year, I was like, I ain't sleeping with, I don't need a man ever, you know? So, like, to be, like, vulnerable, it's, like, constant communication. Totally, for sure.
For me, it was, even though I was dating the first 3 months of my abstinence, I didn't have sex during that first year, which was crucial. Because after I got my year and I started dating somebody, I was dating that person for about 3 months before we had sex, which was very difficult for her because she was very sexual. Like, she wanted to have sex first date. And this is somebody I've known for years. Like, she was, and I knew this. Again, you know, looking at my part. I knew this when I asked her out. Like, I knew who she was, but, you know, did it anyway. But the first time we had sex was great because it was the first time in my life that I was not in the food, the lights were on. It was like, wow. That's like when you're in that place, when you're able to be comfortable enough with yourself and your body and you have peace and the lights are on and you're having a good time, it's like, wow.
Have any of you sought outside help with your sexuality issues? And if so, how do you integrate it with your program?
I have. My pediatrician molested me from the age of 5 to 8. So I definitely had to seek outside help. I actually was seeking outside help before I came to program and sought outside help while I've been in program. And along with my program, I think had I not been in program, I would still be seeking or in outside help because I really believe that I have It has to be everything. I think it has to be physical, spiritual, and emotional. Because if you just kind of deal with, like, the emotional and you leave out the physical and the spiritual, especially the physical, it's like, I don't, you know. And especially for me, learning that I have a positive response when I treat my body physically well, like the sit-ups and everything else like that. Yeah.
I've sought outside help. And I think... again, a lot of things you hear here are just opinion, but I think it's a little bit irresponsible for a sponsor to try and take on certain things in people's history. I do think it's important to say, hey, this is beyond my jurisdiction, and, you know, you may want to get some extra assistance. And I've, you know, read a lot of outside literature, done workbooks. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of resources out there outside of program. Although program's amazing, I'm not, you know, I'm not knocking program, but I do think, you know, sometimes people need things in the toolkit, you know, outside of it.
I eat at night to avoid sexual experiences with my, I can't understand this word, but then it says, and help. So they're asking for help.
When I think back to my relapse, before I relapsed and I was dating someone in program, we weren't living together, but we were pretty much spending the night at each other's house every night. And towards the end of the relationship, and I ended this relationship, really the month and a half it took me to get the guts to end this relationship. Interestingly enough, I started having these little snacks before bed. Literally, I mean, we weren't having sex, and I was like having a snack in bed before I'm going to sleep. So, yeah, there's that direct correlation, I believe, to, you know, something you don't want to do. You know, we're compulsive overeaters. Our default is the food. So, you know, you need to take action.
So we're actually out of questions, unless someone has one, or I can go to the bag. Please.
Hi, Kel.
But, yeah, so the question is, if you want sex and don't get sex, what do you do instead of going for food? Go ahead. So,
okay, so like literally, okay, the first few months of that relationship, like I was the one that wanted to have sex like desperately and never, you know, was like, we never had sex. And so it was so flipping triggering for like my, like all the whole time, all the number of months. And I, being in program, like I don't mess with food. Like I don't turn the food. Turning the food's not an option. But it was like I literally, like I felt like my femininity, like my sexual, like I felt grotesque, like to deny. Like I've not, like what do you mean? And so it really forced me to actually be like, well, what else do I have to offer, you know? And like really balance between like, you know, if my sexual like impulses and possibly the other's anorexia or whatever. But like it like really messed with my head, you know? And again, just like bringing God into it, talking about it with everyone, talking about the feelings, like, wow, I feel totally denied and like disgusting. And it's not because my body, it's not because I'm like ugly, it's not because whatever. And it just like really did allow me to see like how precious sex was, but like how I need, I have more to offer, so.
Yeah, that's my first go-to thought is, you know, what's wrong with me? And my first boyfriend was pre-med and very, very intellectual, like Mensa smart. And so I think sometimes when people are extremely bright, their sex drive is a little lower. And he said, I've never been, you know, that's never been super high for me. And so I definitely had to work through that. One thing that the steps helped me do was look at, because at least for me, my, at times my sex drive is tied to my emotional connection. And so, you know, is there something maybe that I'm, have I been insensitive in some way? Have I been, you know, not available for this person on an emotional level? Is he just having, you know, the dignity of his own experience and need, you know, had a bad day or exhausted? Or so I'll do a little spot check inventory on, you know, is there anything I'm missing here? and then call a friend or go for a run or chew some ice or something. So.
My picker is very broken. I went into Al-Anon. That's what I did. I mean, that's what helped me to identify my kryptonite. And what I mean by that is I used to get this feeling inside, this really like excited feeling that Heather mentioned. You know, when you see somebody across the room, it's like everybody parts. And I used to think that was like, oh, that's the beginning of love. No, run the other way. Because when I look back, and every time I've had that feeling, a lot of pain. It ended up in a lot of pain. So now when I have that feeling, I'm like, oh, there it is. Bye.
The set-aside prayer. I constantly, like my partner, wouldn't have thought in a bajillion years. And I don't think, I actually like that. I need to be that drawn to whoever I'm with. But, like, God set aside who I think I'm supposed to be with. Like, I obviously have no idea. Like, constantly. All the time. And then what does it say? Like, we straighten out spiritually before we straighten out physically or whatever. Like, we straighten out spiritually before I'm, like, able to pick anything. And although, like, I'm still currently on my four-step, I've worked a number of four-steps in other programs. In my other program, and it was like they just constantly like bring God into it, work the steps around it, and like it'll straighten out in God's time. And this freaking set aside prayer is like my shit.
Yeah, the set aside prayer I think is a really good one too. I guess in the work that I have done, I've recognized that there's a certain type of man that I'm, you know, get really like whoa, and then I was able to look at who it reminds me of and what I'm trying to rework by connecting with this particular, you know, type of person. My dad was very violent, and so I didn't know him, so he was out of the picture early on, but I kind of adopted this guy that was like, I think he was 6'3" and a surfer, and called him Daddy Mark. Like, you know, he was everything, and come to find out later was a sex addict, a drug addict. So he was wild and he was larger than life. So anytime I saw a guy that was like 6'2" to 6'4", I was like, hello. And so then I got to see how I was trying to sort of go back to the scene of the crime and rework something that, you know, just, and so then when I realized I don't have to rework stuff anymore, I get to, you know, have a new experience. And I know this is kind of a nebulous response, like it's bigger than just a short answer. But I think my picker was broken because I was trying to figure something out. And now I don't feel like I have to figure it out anymore. I get to have sort of a clean slate after doing a lot of work.
Okay, that's all the time we have for questions. Please help me to thank our speakers, Justin, Christy, and Heather, for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us today. Great.